Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Money is essential.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble and John Jackson filling in for Aaron Flint here live on December 31st, the last day of 2024. We've got open phones the entire hour, 406-294-0970, 406-294-0970, or send us a message on the Montana Talks app. But it's just me and John taking your calls and messages all hour long. We have been talking here a little bit the last hour, continuing that conversation we were having yesterday about that new Kentucky Republican legislator who has proposed a bill to hold parents criminally liable if their kid, minor child, gets a hold of their guns and ends up doing a school shooting. Kelly in Glasgow says, seems to me another devious way of more gun control. AKA, if you have kids, you can't have guns. I think that's right. That kind of seems like where they're... But it doesn't make sense to me that a Republican, you know, would be doing that. But you to me, it kind of sounds like the same of trying to hold the gun manufacturer liable. It's like, look, if somebody goes and does a shooting, you know who's responsible for that? The person that did the shooting. Not the person that made the gun. Not the person that sold the gun. Not the person that bought the gun. The actual person that did the shooting, right? And you, John, you brought up some examples where, yeah, if a parent had actively participated, then that would be different, right?
And also, you know, that there are parents out there, we all know that, that have these teens that they know are in crisis. You know, these kids have got some kind of form of mental illness. Maybe they've fallen down the hole of drug addiction or whatever. They've got a troubled teen on their hands. Now, I'll tell you right now, if I had a troubled teen on my hands, that's where everything would be changing. That's where your weapons have got to be locked away, your valuables and all this. Your life completely changes if you had that scenario. But under just a regular teenager, a regular kid, it's all about training, education, all that. How could you hold a parent responsible for when a kid took a gun? That'd be like saying if a crook broke in your house and stole your gun and went did some with it, you're liable for it. It wouldn't hold water.
I agree. I agree. They come back and say, well, look, if they had one other example other than your minor child driving your car and you're liable for that. They had one other example, but we don't need to talk too much about that. This is a funny story, John. I'm sure you saw this one. President Joe Biden regrets dropping out of the 2024 presidential race because he thinks that he would have beaten Trump, and Kamala Harris obviously didn't, but Biden thinks that he could have beaten Trump. What do you think of that?
Well, he's not all the way wrong there. Now, he could not have beaten Trump. Trump would have beat him. But I actually think he could have done better.
I think so,
than
yeah.
Kamala Harris, because at least he was a known entity. They dumped Kamala Harris on their voters with 3 months to go, and then she turns out to be this complete bird brain, word salad idiot. And they're like, oh, hell no. You know?
Oh, and then the campaign commercials just wrote themselves with all the Kamala Harris clips about having taxpayer dollars pay for criminal illegal aliens in prison to have sex changes and all that kind of stuff. You wouldn't have had those ads with Joe Biden as the Dem.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Live on December 31st, it's David Noble and John Jackson. It's Montana Talks, so we're going to Frank in Paradise. Frank, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, you betcha. So all this talk about illegal immigrants, there's a handful of conservative states that are going to make it illegal for illegal immigrants to reside in their state. And here is a short sentence, a paragraph that Oklahoma made law. A person commits an impermissible occupation if the person is an alien and willfully and without permission enters is and remains in the state of Oklahoma without first obtain legal authorization to enter the United States. So if we can rouse up our state legislatures to ask Governor Greg Gianforte to put forth a bill and have him sign it in this upcoming legislative session to make it illegal. I mean, just simple, and kick all these illegal aliens out of the state by law.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm not opposed to it. I think you may run into constitutional issues. And what's interesting about the existing Montana state law that says employers cannot hire illegal aliens or that's a crime, that's been upheld as constitutional because it's a regulation on employment and labor. The courts have said historically immigration is the exclusive purview of the federal government, and it is under the Constitution. Actually, you know, we always talk about the federal government does so much that's outside of its Article 1, Section 8 powers. But under Article 1, Section 8, there is a specific power granted to Congress to regulate immigration, and so it's historically been considered a federal issue. My only concern with that would be the federal preemption issue. But generally speaking, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and you're right. I think that runs into some constitutional issues because of the federal government's ownership of immigration law. But what you can do is, like we kind of hit this last hour, is go after these businesses.
Right.
Make it where these businesses cannot hire these people. And here's the other thing. Identifications. Your police officers out here, like say in Montana, you're running across these people all the time that have fake IDs, all right? That needs to be prosecuted, okay? That's a crime that just gets overlooked all the time. Start not only prosecuting, but making it very public that in Montana, they catch you with that ID, Jose, they're going to charge you with it. They catch you with that Social Security card that's fake, they're going to charge you with it.
And that may be more effective than a law like Frank in Paradise is suggesting, because are they going to want to live here if they can't get a job?
No. Exactly. You've got to take away all the incentives. We talked about that a minute ago. The jobs and then all the money coming in from the NGOs that houses them and feeds them and all that. You take away all of that. If they've got nothing else, then what we're going to do is reverse the process. Just like Joe Biden brought them all in here, we are going to institute the Donald Trump bus and airlines. Okay, all you got to do is get up on this website, make your reservation, get on the plane. We'll send you back to where you're from. Yeah, be free of charge. You're out.
Heck, I'd even be willing to give them a little incentive bonus.
Oh, get $500 in your pocket when you touch back down in your home country. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Wouldn't be well worth it. Well, and it's like when Tom Homan, you know, the Democrats will go after Tom Homan. And, well, Tom Homan, this is going to cost $100 billion to deport, you know, 10 million illegal. And Tom Homan says, you know what? It's going to cost us a lot more than that if we don't do it.
You know what the illegal aliens take from us every year in crime, in your schools, in your health care? Are you freaking kidding me? I don't care if it costs $100 billion. They're costing us trillions. I mean, forget that. They're out right here.
Hey, did you see that story about that judge-elect that just got charged with trying to buy cocaine from that public defender?
No. Yes. Where was that out of?
Oh, my gosh. I'll show you this story. We talked a lot about it. It's out of I think, Lake County. But, yeah, a judge-elect actually was trying to purchase cocaine from a public defender. And what I want to ask you, though, is they've charged him with, I think it was like solicitation to distribute criminal drugs and then like attempt to buy cocaine or something like that. But he's looking at 35 years for that. And that seems a lot to me.
Under state law here in Montana?
Under state law, it was like a 35-year max.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
Okay.
it was probably a user amount. You know, it's probably, you know, I haven't seen that. I doubt it was kilos and kilos and kilos. But trust me when I tell you, we never, ever, not once took a drug case state here because the state law is so pitiful, so weak, and so pathetic. You can have a guy
here in Montana.
Oh, it's horrible. It is. I mean, you're talking about an absolutely dysfunctional state judicial state criminal justice system here is pathetic. You can have a guy who's got, you know, 2 or 3 felonies on his sheet, and you can't get this guy prosecuted. Even if they do, they'll freaking plea it down to a misdemeanor or dismiss it outright. It's terrible. I guarantee that 35 years is not true. I
think. No, that's always that's normally the case where it's like the maximum is sort of never going to happen. But no, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that analysis of our state drug laws. And, you know, I do think, I don't know if you heard Scott Aspenlighter and Jennifer Owen talking about the slowness of our justice system is really hampering law enforcement efforts because, you know, you can arrest somebody, but when it, you know, when the prosecutors can't file charges for a long time, judges can't see them, and you can't have a trial. And frankly, that's one of the reasons our Yellowstone County Detention Center is so overfilled, because you've got people in there awaiting trial for years and years and years. But we need to expand the prison capacity, too, right? I mean, that would go a long ways.
Oh, big time. Ask any Billings police officer how hard it is to not only get somebody held down there, but then get a case prosecuted.
I wonder what it's like out in the smaller communities in Montana. Of course, I don't think the smaller communities have the drug problems we do here in Billings.
No, they don't. And they probably got better system. Let's leave it right there.
That's right. Hey, open phones for the rest of the hour, folks. 406-294-0970. Call in now. You'll be right up right after this break. Get it?
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble and John Jackson filling in for Aaron Flint. I got another Biden story here I want to get John Jackson's take on. But this is Montana Talks, which means we go straight to the phones. We've got Roger in Billings. Roger, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, David. I'm like many retired people after, you know, 20 years in law enforcement, 7 years military veteran. I decided the best thing to do was buy a mobile home and settle down in one of these big mobile home courts. Well, it was working out fine. You know, I'm like all of the retired people now. We own the mobile homes, but we don't own the lots. And big corporations have bought out these mobile homes, and they're raising the rent faster than the increases that come from Social Security, you know, which most of us live on. I'm 85 years old, and I'm not going to start a career, you know, in some other different field at this point. What I'm saying is we're trapped. You know, we can't pick up and leave. We own the mobile home.
So what would you say, what advice would you give to our listeners out there?
I just want to point out that we're trapped, legally speaking. I don't know, you know, who to turn to. But it's not only me. I'm talking about hundreds of people in these big mobile home courts, like the one I live in. You know, it's probably several hundred people that are in the same situation. But I don't know. You know, perhaps, you know, I don't know if a legislation can be brought into enforcement, you know, to you know, stop at least some kind of usury during this particular time of inflation. You know, somebody's becoming a billionaire over this, while some of those people on Social Security, you know, are facing starvation.
Jeez, I'm so sorry to hear that. I wish I had a silver bullet for that solution, John.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you're in a situation when you're, say, you're retired, and if you're on a fixed income, if you're in living in any situation where they're charging you rent and they can raise that rent, like, say, at every year or whenever, that's not a good spot to be in. There's not much you can do to stop it because you can't legislate. I can't tell a private business, you know, what price they can charge. That's not the free market, right? That's a tough place to be in if you're on a fixed income.
The real solution is massive across the board spending cuts at the federal level to get this inflation under control. That would be a good solution.
Yeah, and like everybody says, the solution to it all is oil and gas. Drill, baby, drill. And that's what Trump's going to do, I think, with his first mountain of executive orders, is open everything back up. Because everything that happens in this country, every good and service you have, comes to you somehow on something that runs on gasoline.
Yeah, right. So, no, because that could bring all the prices down and help everybody out. That would be massive. Let's go to Skip in Hamilton. Skip, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. Nice to talk to you. I always look forward to you being on so we can hear some legal answers.
Awesome.
And
thank you.
When we had our last election and the people of Montana had enough common sense to elect Corey Thompson as Supreme Court Chief Justice, and then Dan Wilson didn't make it as Associate Justice, I was wondering, why did that happen? I mean, and it wasn't just because it wasn't an R or a D next to their name. Why did the people not take the opportunity to fill that slot with another person who was a conservative thinker and did such a much more wonderful job, especially on radio programs, explaining to the people everything that they needed to understand about the soap opera Supreme Court that we have. I thought I'd ask.
That's a great question.
Good idea.
No, Skip, that's a good
idea. And by the way,
go ahead.
Have a wonderful New Year. Thank you very much.
Really good question there. If I knew the answer to that, I would be a political savant and a political genius. What I've heard, first of all, I agree. Judge Dan Wilson was a great Supreme Court candidate. I thought he did a great job every time he spoke. What I have heard from other folks, and I don't know if this is true. I frankly had never gone. I never went to any of the Supreme Court forums or anything like that. But what I heard was that Judge Bidegary, at every sort of campaign stop, would always remind folks that she's a farm and ranch girl from Eastern Montana. And I think most people took that to mean that she was going to be an originalist justice. She's going to be a textualist. She was going to follow the law. She was going to be impartial. That's the explanation I've heard. John, do you have any theories about why would have Corey Swanson won but Judge Wilson lost?
It doesn't make any sense to me. And you and I were talking at the break. That's what's got to end, is these, in big quotes, nonpartisan judicial races, because it's a load of crap. We all know it's a load of crap. And hopefully you can get back to these guys having to put their political affiliation by their name. If they did, we'd probably win 8 out of 10 out of these races here in Montana. But you know what people do? Because they don't know who it is. What they do is they just, I've seen that sign. I've seen that person speak, or so they seem cool. And always, the left wing always puts way more money into these things than we do. That's how they get more signs out there. They get their faces out there. And you got this gal that's doing the John Tester. You know, I'm just a good old girl from Big Sandy, right? And people buy that. And they don't know who either one of them are. So that's what you end up with.
So I think that partisan judicial races, just judging from, I don't know if you heard Speaker of the House Brandon Lear on with Scott Aspenlighter, he was talking about that. Jake Eaton had mentioned it. That's going to be one of the big pushes here in the legislature. I don't have a problem with partisan judicial races. Of course, I'm a true believer in our constitutional system in terms of, in a perfect world, in the way it's supposed to work, is you are supposed to have a nonpartisan judiciary that doesn't put forth their own personal political views into any of their decisions. And that's really how it's supposed to work. And I'm a true believer in it. However, I do think that given the situation that we have here, I think having partisan races would provide more information to the voters. But number two, okay, and as a Republican, as a conservative, part of my belief system as a conservative Republican is that a judge and a justice should set aside their personal views when deciding cases, and there should be a truly impartial, non-biased, and fair judiciary. And so as a Republican, that's my belief is I set aside my political beliefs when you decide a case. I don't think the Democrats have that same philosophy.
Oh, of course not. But they are activists wearing robes. And you get a case before them, you already know how they're going to rule. It's just, I've been saying that for years. I think that's an attitude we as Republicans have to get around as conservatives. We always say we just want our justices to follow the law. Well, no. if their justices are going to operate that way, we have to operate that. If we're always following the law and they just follow politics, guess who wins that? They do. They're going to win in the end. If they're going to fight with fire, we have to fight with fire as well.
But, okay, just to play devil's advocate, but then aren't you just as bad as they are, imputing your own personal views into, and then using the court as a way to push personal beliefs and policies?
Here's my message to Democrats. You say I'm as bad as they are. No, I'm not. I am way worse than you. Believe it. Believe it right now. Okay. I will be worse than you. So better temper that stuff.
So if Democrats are not playing by the rules, you don't think that Republicans should tie our hands behind our back and play by the rules all the time like we historically have?
We not only untie our hands, but go grab a baseball bat. You know, we're in this to win it. Okay, stop playing the gentleman and getting beat every time. I mean, match them tit for tat. You know, but like they say, an eye for an eye. I say two eyes for an eye.
Well, that's kind of like you'd almost have to do that to make up for all the past wrongs.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what did your mama tell you when you were coming up, Dave? The only way you deal with a bully is to punch them in the face. If you do not, if you think you can reason with this guy and talk to him and be nice to him, he's just going to keep punching you in the face.
Right, right, right. Perfect example of that. Joe Biden wanted Donald Trump prosecuted earlier. And he actually regrets picking Merrick Garland because Merrick Garland wasn't partisan enough, wasn't weaponized enough. I stunned to see these stories, but Fitz, exactly what you're saying. These Democrats, they do not pull punches.
They never saw coming that immunity ruling from the Supreme Court. That was the thing that came out of nowhere and saved Donald Trump. And he's absolutely right. And see, everybody has to understand, that's not some unique ruling that they invented. That applies to police officers. Imagine if, when I was working, if I go out and arrest a guy and the guy's violent and he gets hurt during that arrest, can then, when I retire, can the local prosecutors come back and prosecute me for assault? I mean, right. Think about how ridiculous that would be.
Could that guy sue you for civil damages for assault? I mean, it's ridiculous. It kind of matches a message we got here from Wayne. Wayne says, can we hold judges accountable when they release DUI offenders and then the DUI offenders kill somebody? And if not, why not? And that question applies, you know, judges release criminals all the time and then they go and they commit crimes. But you're right. Guess what? Judges have total immunity. You cannot sue a judge. And you know, actually, House members and senators have total immunity for anything they do on the House or the Senate floor. Prosecutors have immunity. Think about if you could sue a prosecutor. Everybody that got criminally charged would go and turn around and sue the prosecutor. And it's the same with the president. So then, this is so shocked. No, it's not.
I mean, he went to a political rally during the business day and told people to protest peacefully. Okay, you know, that's right. Obviously, that's a part of his duties. You cannot prosecute him for that.
I agree with that. All right, coming back, we got open phones, 294-0970. Plus, John Jackson's got a couple more items on his list we've got to cover here on New Year's Eve, live from a snowy downtown Billings.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
U.S. agriculture faces potential disruption to red meat exports due to stalled labor talks between dock workers and shippers at East and Gulf Coast ports. Negotiations broke down in November over automation issues, with temporary contract extensions set to expire January 15th. The U.S. Meat Export Federation warns the uncertainty is already affecting exports, with added surcharges and efforts to reroute ships. These ports handle 45% of U.S. pork and 30% of U.S. beef exports.
Join the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA is the oldest and largest national cattle industry organization working to defend your interests in Washington, D.C. And there are big benefits to being a member. You get news you can use in the National Cattlemen, email updates in the NCBA Beef Bulletin, plus big discounts only for NCBA members. Join by calling 866-233-3872 or online at ncba.org.
The U.S. is on pace to surpass 5 billion gallons of biodiesel and renewable diesel consumption for the first time. That caps a 2024 that saw increased efforts from states to drive adoption, updates to technical standards, and growth in soybean crush capacity, and growing public support for clean transportation fuel. I'm Lane Northblond.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, John Jackson's going to have to hold his topics here for a couple of minutes while we go to the phones. We got Bill in Wolf Point. Bill, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if the program could do a little research on this political travel around the world. We got Nancy Pelosi over in Luxembourg. What were they doing there? And maybe Joe Biden's taking his last fling around the world to visit with people. I don't know. What do you guys think?
John, what do you think?
I've always chafed at that. You see our elected officials getting traveling around the world on our dime all the time on these CODELs. I mean, not only is it a massive waste of our money, but now we know that half the time they're over there hooking up crooked deals for themselves and, you know, so they can get kickbacks of our foreign aid headed over there, or hooking up some kind of crooked deal with business people over there. I mean, all of that needs to be shut down, all of it.
I mean, why do we have a State Department?
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're there to do. They are your representatives in that country. Yeah.
Right. All right, let's go to Ken in the Heights. Ken, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you very kindly. You know, you talk about people being taken advantage of things against the law that should be prosecuted. You know, Biden has broken every federal law on the books, and yet we don't prosecute that SOB.
Or impeach him. You know, he didn't get impeached either.
I know. Now, here's another thing. You talk about these illegal aliens. They don't come underneath the jurisdiction of being an American citizen. So why do they need to be having a trial and a lawyer and everything else? All you do is you take them back in the woods someplace and make them into a grizzly bear burger or something, or put them on a bus and take them back where the hell they came from.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. I guess the thought I had there during that call, John, was I agree that Joe Biden has broken a lot of laws and violated his oath of office. But when you've got a majority or 50% of Americans or 48% of Americans who are Democrats and who still support him, and who continue to vote for Democrat senators and Democrat Congress people, the reality is that our solution's not in D.C. or with any of the D.C. Our solution is getting these people that are still voting Democrat to stop voting Democrat, because if those folks weren't voting Democrat all the time, then maybe you would have seen Joe Biden get impeached.
Well, it also comes back to everything I just said about the bullies. Is they impeached Donald Trump over nonsense twice. How did we respond? Crickets. So what does that tell you? The next time they have a shot, if you get Hakeem Jeffries here in 2026 to be the speaker, they'll do it again, because they know we don't respond in kind. What should have happened under Mike Johnson is they should have, over nothing, just make something up, just like the Democrats did, and do it in 30 days. Exactly like they do. 30 days, impeach, boom, next. You show these people, they will get back what they give you, and they'll think about it the next time.
The one thing where we did do that is on getting rid of the judicial filibuster and pushing through all the judicial nominees. Trump did pretty good on that.
What you remember, that was Cocaine Mitch. Harry Reid was the one that did away with that, and Cocaine Mitch got up on the floor of the Senate and said, y'all going to regret this, and they did.
And they did. What were the other topics you had on your list today?
Well, I have one more, and I don't know if you know, there's a new pandemic. So we're going to have to be wearing masks and getting jabs and distancing. And if it saves one life, and we're all in this together, David, and that's the bird flu. Ermagerd, oh my, lions and tigers and bears and bird flu is here now. And oh, you've got the same usual suspects out there. You got Fauci and Burks and this nutbag, this Leanna Nguyen, I think is her
name. Yeah, Dr. Nguyen. She was on the Sunday shows on Face the Nation talking about how not only do we have bird flu, John, but we've got COVID still around, and those viruses are going to, like, mate and, like, create, like, a super virus that has all of the bad parts of COVID plus all the bad parts of... And so what Dr. Nguyen is saying is that the Biden administration needs to rush out, you know, like, you know, 5 million or 10 million doses of a bird flu vaccine, because Dr. Nguyen is really concerned that once Trump takes over, that he's going to, you know, cut down on all the vaxes.
This virus hysteria, it's like Dracula. You know, they say the legend of Dracula was Dracula could not break into your home. You had to open the door and invite him in. This virus hysteria is the same way. You know, Trump comes in, this is not going to happen because they're just not going to allow it to happen. They're just going to ignore it because it's BS, and we all know it's BS. But you see, they said this morning, Biden has already got a contract with Big Pharma for, you know, $1 billion or whatever it is for a new vax for, for this stuff, or for new amounts of that vax for the bird flu. These people are insane. And you know why they're out there free to run their mouths about this stuff? Once again, like we've talked about for the past 2 hours, because they didn't pay a price for COVID. If they had, not one of them would be uttering a word right now.
That's another example of, if those people can't be prosecuted, if Fauci and Burks and everybody else that supported lockdowns and those unconstitutional lockdowns, if they cannot be prosecuted for the crimes, for those, then we need to pass new laws that make it a crime to do ever again what they did during the COVID-19 lockdowns and violating our rights like that.
Well, Fauci has lied and wrote. He's committed perjury.
That's
how
crime,
many
yep.
times? I mean, that's easy for you right there. I tell you something. Here's another one of my fantasies, Dave. It's this is what I would do, and I'm going to go after journalists. And what we're going to do is we're just going to float out there some it's fake, but they think it's classified information. And I want to see if they'll not only take it, but then publish it. And as soon as I do, bam! I mean, we're going to prosecute them for that.
And, oh, okay, for taking classified information and publicizing it, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah,
because they do that all the time to help Democrats.
Oh, of course, and we're just going to we're telling everybody it's a whole new day across the board. We're watching. We're not scared. We're going to prosecute you for current crimes, past crimes, future crimes. It's a whole new day. We're running the place just like you did.
It really does feel like a whole new day, and it feels so different from the first Trump administration. And frankly, as hopeful and as positive I was about the second Trump administration, his cabinet picks have blown me away. They exceeded my expectations. He's even it seems like Donald Trump is even more aggressively pursuing his agenda than we could have ever hoped for.
I'm happy about all the big ones except for Marco Rubio at State. You saw that, you know who, you know, little hands Marco is right off the bat. And now you've seen Chuck Schumer and John Brennan come out and praise his nomination and that he'll do a good job over there. What does that tell you? That's your big red light, danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, but he's central casting.
What do you mean?
Oh, Donald Trump always loves to say people are central casting if they look the part. And Marco Rubio looks like a great Secretary of State.
Well, now don't get me wrong. I think he will go after.
He's great on anti-communism stuff because he's a Cuban American, Cuban ancestry, and having lived in Miami for 3 years like I did, there's nobody that understands commies like the Cubans do.
Oh, sure. And he's going to, you know, shift focus maybe back to South America, where it's been lacking for many, many, many years.
Bring back the Monroe Doctrine, in my opinion.
Oh, heck yeah. And he's going to be an Israel supporter, all of that. But he's not going to touch the deep state apparatus there at the State Department. And they need to be touched hard.
Oh, yeah. What is that? Is it Foggy Bottom, do they call that?
Oh, yeah. And they are. I mean, if you say who is the, in big quotes, the deep state.
State, the Department of State people have historically been very left-wing, and the career bureaucrats in the State Department have been historically left-wing. Even, frankly, even before, you know, the DOJ and the FBI got corrupt, I think state was corrupted.
I mean, what did they say? 15 of the 19 hijackers of 9/11 got their visas to come here from these idiots with that Visa Express program.
Right. Let's go to Chris in Columbia Falls. Chris, thanks for calling.
Okay, see if you can handle this question. What legal obligation does the U.S. have to accept refugees? Now, we signed a treaty on the U.N. 1951, the Refuge Convention. We signed that. The duty is not to return a person to the state where they may face torture and other serious harm, and absolutely is under the UN Convention Against Torture. The U.S. signed this. Now, is this going to be an ongoing problem for the rest of our lives until we understand we are not obligated to follow treaties from other nations? But we did. Under the international law, you can't ban asylum seekers from certain countries under the international law. So we signed this. The U.S. has signed and ratified this a number of international treaties.
Hey, well,
and we're up, pretty technical from that point on.
We're up against the break. We'll react to that right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, as we've been talking about the Supreme Court of Montana, the Supreme Court of the United States, Caden, the producer, makes a good point, which is, did you know that the court supreme is just a regular court with sour cream and tomatoes? Thought that was a good one. He actually said it was the Supreme Court, but I think if it's gonna be added, you got to call it the court supreme.
You know what they call a quarter pounder in France?
What?
A royale with cheese.
A royale with cheese. I love it.
Pulp Fiction. That's live from.
Hey, let's squeeze Perry on, and then we're gonna talk. We're going to talk what Chris was talking in Columbia Falls about asylum and refugee issues. But first, let's go to Perry in Columbus. Perry, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Mr. Noble and Mr. Jackson, my two favorite Montana Talks voices in Aaron Flint's absence. I have to take John Jackson's side in the choice whether to treat the radical new left as reasonable people or start by giving them a big fat dose of their own medicine. It's the only thing they will understand. Mao Zedong said, all power comes from the barrel of a gun. This is fighting fire with fire. There's a time to turn the other cheek and a time to draw the sword. And this is not the time to turn the other cheek. Merry Christmas. I hope you had, and Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you too, Perry. Great call as usual. Well, there you go, John. You got the callers on your side on this one.
Oh, it's 100%. And like I said, of course, we all as human beings, we want justice done. And we have that urge for revenge. But see, it's not just that. Like I've said before, you have to do this because you're showing them making them learn not to ever do this again. And that's the only thing that will stop them from doing it again is if they fear your reprisal. Okay, that's what's going on for 25 years in this country is Republicans turning the other cheek and being the bigger man. How has that worked out for you? Huh?
So far, not so good.
Not so good.
But some of us are still idealists, and we haven't given up hope on our fellow Americans yet, and we think there's still some chance that, look, a lot of these people that are still voting Democrat, they don't know what the Democrat Party really is, and they could change their vote once they realize that this is not the Democrat Party of the 1990s anymore. So I get it, though. I mean, I understand. To me, it's like there's going to be a line that gets crossed eventually where I do think I would then support sort of changing tactics and sort of going outside the rules. I'm just, maybe I'm naive and still trying to hang on to my hopes for a better future here with, and hoping that the Democrats are going to come around.
Oh, they will not. And I'll tell you why they won't, because they're completely and utterly propped up by the mainstream media. And mainstream media that is actually to the left of them. And that media has decided, they decided back in 2016, 8 years ago, that there was no more journalism. They were completely and utterly going to act as enablers and basically a super PAC for the Democrats. They know they can get away with anything. So what's to stop them? If we don't stop them, no one will. No one will ever call them to task for anything.
Yeah, let's go back to the Chris in Columbia Falls made a good call. I'm not exactly familiar with the specific either treaty or whatever that he was talking about that the U.S. signed in terms of accepting refugees or asylums. But what we were talking about was just how much abuse of that system Biden has allowed to take place.
Yeah, and I had this up here. This is Donald Trump with that treaty. Okay.
Right. So who's going to enforce it? Here's the thing that you learn in law school, John, about international law is that, first of all, you learn that national law and state law is enforceable because guess what? We got people with guns that are going to make sure that those laws are followed. And frankly, even our civil courts send out people with guns. If I get a judgment against somebody and somebody owes my client $100,000 and they've got $100,000 in a bank account, I can send the sheriff to go get the money. And that's really – and so then when I bring that up, it's like when it comes to international law, one thing you learn in law school is that really there's nobody to enforce it. And so there's actually an academic debate amongst law professors about whether international law – even exists, or even if it's not a thing, because there's nobody to enforce it, right? And so you're right. You could tear up that treaty, and now what does that do to our ability to get other countries to enter into treaties for us in the future? Maybe a policy question, but in terms of the power to federal law or international law, it's just not there.
It's like what they're trying to do to Bibi Netanyahu, and I think one of his people in his cabinet. They've got an international criminal court warrant out for that. We got a warrant out. Okay, they're a Walmart cop. Okay, yeah. What are you gonna bring me before some Walmart court? Please.
Right.
Yeah, lay one hand on me, and I will take everybody that you know, and we'll put people on them and have them arrested and have them extradited into Israel and see if you like it. I mean, right. two people can play that game.
Yep, no, that's right. And the main reason the United States never joined the International Criminal Court, and if I recall correctly, that was sort of under the George W. Bush administration, and we declined to join it because we knew it was going to be populated by countries that hate us, and they were going to issue international arrest warrants for our soldiers, our DEA agents, you name it. They would be arresting them around the world.
And it is basic premise, it is taxation without representation. How can you have this court somewhere that's not even here in the United States have any authority over us at all when we have no authority over them?
No, it violates the basic foundations of a government, yep. Which is to have consent of the governed. Hey, folks, we're at the end of the show. Pleasure guest hosting. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for all the calls. John Jackson, thank you for being here today.
Yes, sir.
Enjoyed it as always. Aaron Flint will be back after the new year. I hope you're looking forward to it as much as I am. David Noble in for Aaron Flint. Texting and rolling.